everyone. Welcome back to all my listeners. This is episode 17 in season 11. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. My name is Sonal Patel, and this is the Paint the Medical Picture podcast series. Now, I just wanted to give my thanks and my gratitude to all of my loyal listeners out there. Thank you so much, you guys. Because of all your support and loyalty, I have been consistently the number one medical billing and coding podcast on FeedSpot since January 1st, 2024. And it continues to fall between the top 75 and top 100 Apple podcast charts again and again. So I just wanted to say thank you so much, and I see all of you and all of your support and your reviews and your five stars each and every month. So in thanks to all of you, I'm going to keep on going. All right, you guys, let's get into today's episode. You know, it's the last Wednesday of the month, so it's my newsworthy fraud, waste, and abuse highlights for the month of April. And of course, I'm going to be spotlighting some of those from the month's criminal and civil enforcement cases that I find newsworthy. And in my trusty tip, I wanted to highlight a new online portal that's open to the public here in the U.S. for reporting a healthcare competition complaint. Now, I'm going to go ahead and close out and round out today's episode with a remarkable quote on quality and quantity by John Lasseter. This episode is sponsored by Advanced Coding Services. Let's get into it. Today's episode is sponsored by Advanced Coding Services, a leading medical billing and medical coding school in the United States. Whether you're just starting out or a seasoned professional, our training equips you with the tools and support you need to advance your career. Our medical billing and coding school meets your needs worldwide online or in person with one-on-one support throughout your training. We are committed to helping our alumni and credentialed medical community in keeping up their certifications by offering various avenues for acquiring your continuing education units. In addition to our Mastering the Business of Medicine retreats offered several times throughout the year in different parts of the country, we now offer memberships. You can conveniently earn your CEUs by attending our exclusive members-only webinars. Since our aim is to nurture and grow the careers of individuals who work in the business of medicine, we call our member area the Apple Orchard. Advanced Coding Services, educate, nurture, inspire, reaching back with a hand up. So let's get into newsworthy. The month's fraud, waste, and abuse cases. The month of April saw 30 cases as of the recording of this episode. Early April saw an oncology practice, physicians, and a reference laboratory to pay over $4 million to settle False Claims Act allegations. Now, the oncology practice and its affiliated physicians have agreed to pay over $1.3 million, while the reference laboratory has agreed to pay over $2 million, plus accrued interest in civil settlements with the United States and the state of Texas, to resolve alleged violations of the False Claims Act. The United States alleged that the hematology and oncology practice entered an unlawful kickback arrangement with a San Antonio, Texas-based diagnostic reference laboratory back in 2016. The laboratory provided in-office bone marrow biopsy services at the oncology practice locations and allegedly performed subsequent diagnostic testing on those biopsies. According to the United States, the laboratory agreed to pay $115 for each biopsy referred by the oncology practice and its physicians. The payments for each referred biopsy were paid to the private practice entities of three oncology practice physicians. The United States contended that the payments for referrals of biopsies constituted kickbacks within the meaning of the anti-kickback statute, and that the terms of the written agreement between the oncology practice and the laboratory failed to meet any statutory self-harbor. The anti-kickback statute prohibits offering, paying, soliciting, or receiving remuneration to induce referrals of items or services covered by a federal healthcare program, such as Medicare, Medicaid, or TRICARE. Claims submitted in violation of the anti-kickback statute may give rise to liability under the False Claims Act. The civil settlement with the oncology practice and its physicians also resolves allegations that one specific female physician, through the oncology practice, provided medically unnecessary tests, services, and treatments to Medicare, TRICARE, and Texas Medicaid beneficiaries in the San Antonio metropolitan area, and billed the federal healthcare programs for the medically unnecessary tests, services, and treatments. She and her practice entity also entered into a 3-year integrity agreement with the United States Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General, the HHS-OIG. The civil settlement with the oncology practice and its physicians also resolves claims brought under the QI-TAM, or whistleblower, provisions of the False Claims Act by a physician formerly employed by the female oncologist. The QI-TAM provisions of the False Claims Act permit private parties to file an action on behalf of the United States and receive a share of any recovery. The claims resolved by the settlement are allegations only, and there has been no determination of liability. Also in early April, an owner of telemedicine companies pleads guilty to $110 million worth of a Medicare fraud scheme. The owner of media and management companies pleaded guilty in connection with a $110 million telemedicine fraud scheme involving medically unnecessary durable medical equipment, or DME, including orthotics such as back and knee braces. He pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit healthcare fraud. The judge on the case has scheduled sentencing for July 18, 2024. Between March 2016 and January 2023, through his companies, he entered into business relationships with telemarketing companies that generated leads by targeting Medicare beneficiaries. The telemarketers then paid his media and management companies on a per-order basis to generate orders for DME for those beneficiaries. To arrange for these orders to be signed, he worked with medical staffing companies, including one in the state of Massachusetts, to find doctors and nurses who were willing to review and sign pre-populated orders, typically without any contact with the beneficiaries. The records falsely portrayed the medical providers as having performed a legitimate examination of the beneficiary. He then provided the signed orders to the telemarketing companies, which then sold the orders to the DME suppliers. He knew that these DME suppliers would use the signed orders to submit claims to Medicare for DME that were medically unnecessary based on false documentation and tainted by kickbacks. The charge of conspiracy to commit healthcare fraud provides for a sentence of up to 10 years in prison, supervised release for up to 3 years, and a fine of up to $250,000 or twice the gross gain or loss, whichever is greater. Sentences are imposed by a federal district court judge based upon the U.S. sentencing guidelines and statutes that govern the determination of a sentence in a criminal case. Mid-April saw a telemedicine nurse practitioner sentenced for a $7.8 million durable medical equipment fraud scheme. Here, a Virginia-based nurse practitioner was sentenced in federal court in Boston, Massachusetts, in connection with a $7.8 million telemedicine fraud scheme involving medically unnecessary durable medical equipment, again, that's DME, including orthotics such as back and knee braces. She was sentenced by the judge on the case to 18 months in prison, followed by 2 years of supervised release, with the first year to be served in home confinement. She was also ordered to pay over $3 million in restitution. In November 2023, she pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit healthcare fraud. Between December 2018 and April 2020, the nurse practitioner worked with a purported telemedicine company to sign orders for medically unnecessary durable medical equipment, DME. These DME orders were pre-populated by telemarketing companies that called Medicare beneficiaries to solicit their information. Through DocuSign, she signed these DME orders even though she did not have any contact with the beneficiaries and did not have a provider-patient relationship with them. Often, she signed these DME orders without reading them. For instance, one packet was 16 pages long and contained multiple orders for those orthotics. She electronically signed her name 12 times and completed the orders in approximately 32 seconds. A second packet was 37 pages long and contained multiple orders for orthotics. She electronically signed her name 24 times and completed the orders in approximately 45 seconds. Once she signed these orders, the telemarketing company sold them to DME suppliers, which then submitted claims to Medicare. As a result of her participation in this conspiracy, over $7.8 million in claims were submitted to Medicare for DME that were not medically necessary, based on false documentation and tainted by kickbacks. Mid-April also saw two doctors sentenced for $4 million fraudulent urine drug testing scheme. The owner and the medical director of a Kentucky pain clinic were sentenced for their respective roles in a scheme that defrauded Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial insurance companies of over $4 million for medically unnecessary urine drug testing. The clinic's medical director was sentenced to 1 year and 6 months in prison and ordered to pay over $1 million in restitution. The other man, the clinic owner, and a licensed chiropractor was sentenced to 2 years and 6 months in prison and ordered to pay over $3 million in restitution. According to court documents and evidence presented at trial, the pair orchestrated a scheme in which their clinic staff billed for urine drug tests that were not medically necessary, but were lucratively reimbursed by taxpayer-funded insurance providers like Medicare and Medicaid. The men continued in their scheme even as their expensive drug testing machine malfunctioned because it was not properly maintained, which caused the machine to produce results that falsely suggested patients were testing positive for street drugs like ecstasy or heroin. Insurance proceeds from urine drug testing ended up compromising three-quarters of the clinic's revenue. On March 23, 2023, a federal jury convicted the medical director of healthcare fraud and the owner of healthcare fraud and conspiracy to commit healthcare fraud. Now, there were many, many of the other usual suspects as well, from elder abuse cases, COVID-19 schemes, opioids and pill mills cases, and even more kickbacks and bribery schemes. But I wanted to pay particular attention to a false claims case involving a major pharmaceutical company. Here, headlines state, a False Claims Act complaint filed against Regeneron Pharmaceuticals for fraudulent drug pricing reporting. The United States filed a complaint under the False Claims Act, the FCA, against Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc., a New York-based pharmaceutical company. Regeneron manufactures and sells EYLEA, an antivascular endothelial growth factor inhibitor approved by the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, to treat, among other conditions, neovascular, wet, age-related macular degeneration, or wet AMD, which is a prevalent, usually age-related condition that impairs vision. EYLEA is a leading Medicare expense with payments of more than $25 billion between the years 2012 and 2023. Now, the complaint alleges that Regeneron fraudulently inflated Medicare reimbursement rates for EYLEA by knowingly submitting false average sales price reports to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that excluded certain price concessions. In particular, the United States alleges that Regeneron knowingly failed to report price concessions in the form of credit card processing fees that Regeneron paid to specialty drug distributors to benefit its customers. According to the complaint, Regeneron paid these credit card fees so that distributors would accept credit cards for EYLEA purchases while still charging a lower cash price for the drug, and so that Regeneron's customers, typically retina and ophthalmic practices, could receive credit card benefits for their purchases, such as cash back and other credit card rewards. The United States alleges that Regeneron internally attempted to disguise the payments as bona fide service fees, which are not considered price concessions, when it knew the payments were not bona fide service fees. The government alleges that Regeneron manipulated Medicare's drug pricing process by knowingly failing to report its payment of credit card processing fees as price concessions to its customers, said an said an acting U.S. attorney for the District of Massachusetts. He continues, quote, by doing so, Regeneron greatly inflated the cost of its drug to Medicare over many years and enhanced its revenues. Falsely reported average sales prices cost the Medicare system hundreds of millions of dollars, and we will make every effort to prevent such practices, end quote. The lawsuit was originally filed under the QI-TAM, or whistleblower provisions, of the FCA. Under the FCA, private parties file an action on behalf of the United States and receive a portion of the recovery. The FCA permits the United States to intervene in and take over the action, as it has done here. If a defendant is found liable for violating the FCA, the United States may recover 3 times the amount of its losses, plus applicable penalties. The claims asserted in the complaint are allegations only. There has been no determination of liability. And now, it's time for my best practice tips in Trustee Tip. The Department of Justice's Antitrust Division, the Federal Trade Commission, and the Department of Health and Human Services have launched an online portal for the public to report potentially unfair and anti-competitive healthcare practices. This portal can be found at healthycompetition.gov. Now, it's important for the public to know that there are federal laws in place to ensure healthy competition. Now, the first is called the Sherman Act. The Sherman Act prohibits certain agreements between companies that harm competition. The Sherman Act also prohibits companies from unlawfully gaining or maintaining monopoly power. The second is the Clayton Act. The Clayton Act prohibits companies from merging when the merger may substantially lessen competition. The third is the Federal Trade Commission Act. The Federal Trade Commission Act prohibits unfair methods of competition. It also prohibits companies from acting in an unfair or deceptive manner. And finally, the fourth. The fourth is the Robinson-Patman Act, and it prohibits, among other things, a seller from charging competing buyers different prices for the same commodity or discriminating in the provision of allowances or services furnished or paid to customers. Now, there are 6 examples of conduct that can harm competition in healthcare. The first example is consolidation, joint ventures, and roll-ups of healthcare providers or companies. The second example is for collusion or price fixing among competitors. The third involves preventing transparency. The fourth example includes healthcare contract language and other practices that restrict competition. The fifth example is for anti-competitive uses of healthcare data. And finally, the 6th example is for unnecessary healthcare provider recertification or accreditation requirements. And finally, I focus Season 11 Spark on quality versus quantity. I want this 11th season Spark to be filled with our world's thought leaders, writers, artists, philosophers, everyone who inspires the need for better understanding of quality versus quantity. So, in this week's inspiring quote in Spark is from John Lasseter. Quality is the best business plan. Absolutely true, right? This quote reassures us that quality is the better choice in business. The Oxford Dictionary defines quality as the standard of something is measured against other things of a similar kind, the degree of excellence of something. This quote and the definition of quality encourages us to keep on maintaining and perfecting quality in all our business ventures. I'm happy John Lasseter's spark still burns brightly in all of us today. So that wraps up today's episode, and as always, I appreciate you all diving into today with me. If you want more information from me, please go ahead and follow me on LinkedIn. I'll leave links to everything in the show notes below. Now, all right, you guys, friendly reminder to go ahead and catch my LinkedIn Live broadcast this Friday with my good friend and colleague, Betty Hovey, for our very last April compliance capers. Now, remember, we devoted this entire month of April on self-disclosures. So in this episode, we're going to be wrapping it up with a very large case involving annual wellness visits. Now you can always make sure and see my full video versions on my YouTube channel for Paint the Medical Picture. All right, you guys, I wish you guys all an incredible wrap up to your month of April as well. And I'll see you guys next month in the month of May. Thanks so much for listening in on today's episode. And I hope every week with me brings you closer to helping your providers paint a masterpiece. See you next Wednesday.